Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
Yeah, welcome listeners. With me today is Madeline Sorensen with Public Annex, and we will be talking about Public Annex today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah, thanks for doing the interview, Madeline. So if you don't mind, I'll just ask you the first question and we can get started.
Sure. Let's do it.
How did you come up with the idea for Public Annex?
So Public Annex began with a group of people. We all worked together at an art studio and urban farm program called Project Grow, which was a part of Port City Development Center in Portland. And we were seeing a lot of changes happening in disability services, and it was affecting day programs. And we saw that that model needed something to support it. A lot of the programs were shifting towards a focus of community engagement. So being out and about in the community with groups of people who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we noticed that a lot of the available spaces in the community weren't exactly inclusive, especially if they were low cost and free, which was, you know, we didn't have a lot of monetary resources to be doing these community outings with groups of people. And so here we are working at Project Grow thinking like we really want to engage in the art community and the farming community, because that was something that we did at the facility. But then when we started to move out into the community, we noticed that there were less spaces to go, and Public Annex kind of arose out of that void of a need for more accessible, inclusive spaces in Portland for these groups of people who had, I guess, a requirement to be out and about in the community for their programs to be funded. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Okay. I feel like there's a lot to say about it, and I'm like maybe oversimplifying it, but Public Annex wanted to be a space for people to be in community around art and farming.
Yeah, I was wondering, wasn't also the idea is to make it as accessible as possible?
Yeah.
At the time I believe you and I had spoken, you said that there was a feeling that art and farming were the most accessible engagements within the community.
Yeah, they were things that we were all passionate about, and a lot of the people that we worked with at Project Grow were passionate about it, and we wanted to create spaces that were open to everyone, so not just people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, but people from all of Portland who share an interest in art and farming. So it would be this more inclusive space where everyone can learn from each other and we can all create together. And yeah, art and farming are things that we think have a lot of access points, because there's no right way to do it. There's definitely methods and techniques and things like that, but working with the earth and creating art are pretty flexible mediums.
Yeah, and I so the few times I was able to participate with Public Annex, I remember a few of the rules, not all of them. Wasn't one of them is everybody is a student and everybody is a teacher?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had some community agreements, and they were just things that we would go over at the beginning of an art class or farm work party. And yeah, one of them is everyone is an artist and a teacher. And that was just kind of our, one of our philosophies about how we're all there. We are all bringing something unique to the table, and everyone has something of value to contribute to the group, to the community.
That's got to be one of the best inclusive community agreements that I've ever heard.
Yeah, and I apply it to my everyday life too, you know. There's definitely people who, there's a lot of roles in society, you know, teacher, student, and then there's caregiver and client, and those can start to create hierarchies. And, you know, when I worked as a caregiver, I was caring for my quote unquote client, but they were also caring for me in a lot of ways. So it's way more reciprocal than sometimes the roles are set up to be.
So I was wondering, Madeline, did you set this up? I mean, did you, you were kind of like the driving force, or you were one of the driving forces, but that started Public Annex. Can you tell me who else was helping you out with this?
Yeah.
As well?
There's so many people. And I would definitely, yeah, I was just one of many people. The original dream team consisted of, you know, the staff from Project Grow, and it was Carissa Burkett and Dominic Amarin, Charlie Foster, Ollie Kittleson, Chandra Glaceman, and Rachel Mulder, and Lara Olin, Sierra Kind, Lauren Moran. I really hope I'm not forgetting anyone. Jamie Lefkovich. It's a very long list of, oh, Cyan Bott, Rondalee DeSantos. There are, yeah, I really hope I didn't forget anyone. I'm just making the list in my head. But it, yeah, definitely a lot of people involved. And, you know, it grew from there, and a lot of the core people are still around, and I would say, like, also, yeah, Sonia Hamilton has been there since the beginning, Larry Supnett, Linda Akagi. Those are some other people too. Yeah.
All right. And did Susan join your group later?
Oh yeah, Suzanne Lohr. Yeah, she joined a year ago or something like that, a couple years ago.
Yeah. Shall we move on to the next question? So the next question is, what is the history of Public Annex? Of which, you know, I know that we kind of went over it a little bit in what was the idea, but do you have any more on the history of Public Annex? How many years it took to get this going, I guess?
Yeah, we became a nonprofit at the beginning of 2016, January. And we had been plotting and planning and dreaming and scheming like the entire year of 2015. So it's been, I guess, almost 5 years. And it's definitely grown a lot. We started thinking that we were going to be working really closely with provider organizations to create these, to create like classes and workshops and gatherings that people who were participating in these community programs, community integration programs, could participate in. And then, you know, we built all these classes. We had like a class every day of the week, and they were going to take place at Tabor Space and People's Yoga. And we specifically wanted to have a, like, to have our classes in public spaces like Tabor Space, and because it kind of contributed to the idea that we are creating something for the public, for anyone, and we didn't want it to be like a closed off space. So, but we made this whole calendar of events, and then we publicized it to the provider organizations, and we said, like, here's a great place to bring your group outings to, come on down. And like, crickets, like, nobody came. There were a few groups came, but it was one of those situations where we learned that if you build it and they will come does not really work. So then we needed to start listening to what people actually needed and wanted. And then through that process, we came up with a slightly different model, which was offering like one class, or wait, we had two classes at first. And then expanding who we were reaching out to. And all of a sudden, it organically turned into what it is now today, which is, I don't know. How would you describe it? You've been in an art class.
So once every Wednesday, I would say that people get together at Public Annex, or at least they did before the pandemic hit, and people would lead an art class. I mean, the participants and the staff, anybody could lead an art class if they wanted to.
Yeah, it became more of a, we have a different facilitator each week rather than a standing, you know, painting and drawing class on Mondays, theater class on Tuesdays. Our Wednesday class is something different every week. So yeah.
It kind of follows your philosophy of everybody is a student and everybody is a teacher, because the participants or clients, however you want to say it, could also lead classes. And then on top of that, so could the staff. So, I mean, really followed that philosophy of everybody's a teacher and everybody's a student.
Right. Exactly. So that's kind of, yeah, it took a lot of trial and error, and also like responding to the needs of the people who were showing up and doing outreach and stuff to kind of land on what it became, which is still flexible and changeable.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it will adapt with the times as the times are needed. I think now they do it over Zoom?
Yeah, yep. So they're meeting every week still, and it's the same model where a different artist is invited to facilitate, to offer a prompt, and then everyone kind of works on it at the same time in whatever way suits them best.
So it's still very much an art meeting and not a social meeting?
But it was always kind of both of those things. So yeah. I think it is still.
I must admit, I really do miss the one-on-one personal interactions in Tabor Space.
I know. Tabor Space was really great for that meeting, for coffee before or after class, and just, yeah, seeing each other in person was great. I miss it.
Yeah, I miss the interaction with, you know, Laura and Rachel and Madeline and Susan and Charlie and anybody else who'd show up.
Yeah.
Sorry, went off track there.
Oh no, it's okay. I miss it too. And then now I'm thinking of all these people that I forgot to mention. I can't believe I forgot to mention Tommy earlier.
Is he sitting behind you right now?
He's not. He's downstairs. But yeah, I also, maybe I should explain the connection between art and farming a little bit.
Yeah. Too. You guys do have like this small community farm out there in Northeast, is it?
Yeah, in the Cully neighborhood. So we originally, the Project Grow had a farm as well. So that's kind of where that came from. And it's kind of always, you know, made a lot of sense to us that we are farming and making art, and it's just a way of caring, another way of caring for each other. And so Republic Annex has decided to let go of the physical farm space, mm-hmm. and transition.
Well, it sounds like Public Annex ran into some financial issues and had to adapt to dealing with more online stuff, and you can do art online, but let's face it, you really can't stick your hands in the dirt online.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So,
okay.
It's just adapting to a new situation until things can improve. Yeah. What is your vision for Public Annex?
My vision is that everyone who has been touched by Public Annex or participated in Public Annex or felt what it's like to be in an inclusive space that was created by everyone in Public Annex, that they can carry that with them to other things that they do in their life and try to make the spaces around them as accessible and inclusive as possible. And yeah, I guess, you know, take those community agreements and apply them. For me, Public Annex has never really been about a specific space or a specific group, but it's kind of this way of living and a way of, you know, accepting people for who they are and valuing people for what they contribute, and having a lot of fun, celebrating each other. So yeah, I think like whatever, you know, that's my vision, has always kind of been my vision for the future of Public Annex. Like no matter what nonprofit status it has, it will always be this kind of way of being in the world.
I like that vision. I really do. It always brings me great joy and hope.
Yeah. Me too.
So, I don't suppose you'd mind telling me a little bit about, I was able to participate in what you call a field of view. Can you tell me a little bit about field of view?
Yeah, definitely. Field of View is the Public Annex Artist Residency Program, and it was originally created by Carissa Burkett and Lo Moran. And the philosophy behind Field of View is that it would be an artist residency for artists who identify as having an intellectual or developmental disability. and the residency would provide them and a supply budget and a mentor who shared an interest in what an artistic interest with the artist. And then they would meet in a public space that maybe they typically wouldn't have access to make work in for 3 months. So yours was with Kurt, and you guys did some photography in nature. So you went out and took pictures together, and he helped you. I don't know. I mean, maybe you could describe if you want, or I can talk about some other residencies too.
Well, I know that Kurt helped me out with figuring out some things on the camera I did not know exist. There was an awful lot to a camera, a lot more than I thought there was. And I must admit that I probably needed a lot more time to actually understand a camera and know how to use it properly. But Kurt did his absolute best to really help me out with all of that. And both him and Dina really worked quite hard to help me bring some beautiful nature scenery to light, or to the end, which is there at the, when we got to display it at the museum.
Oh, yeah. Not
at the art gallery, excuse me.
Yeah, at Wolf Gallery is where we had a final exhibition. Yeah, so all the artists who participated, which was five each year, would get to show their work. But yeah, so it happened for 3 years consecutively, and it was a really great one-on-one experience for both the artist and mentor. And it brought people to spaces they hadn't been able to make art at before. Some other examples, we had Austin Bragg. He was really interested in public transit, and so him and his mentor Alex Peter would meet out downtown and observe public transit and draw from life. Michael Sherman is really interested in animation, and his residency was at Open Signal with Maura Campbell Balkus, and they did some really cool green screen work and animated some of his drawings and video. It was really diverse, lots of different things. One year someone really liked cats, so they met at Pixie Project and drew cats each week. And so it was really just about what the artist wanted to do, and then we tried to make it happen.
The only thing I could say about the experience is I definitely needed more time.
Yeah, 3 months really goes by fast, especially if you're trying to dig into a new technique or skill.
Thank you, Madeline, for coming in and sharing all that information with us. Look forward to having you in again real soon.
Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah, thanks for doing the interview, Madeline.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.